once it sounds good, you don't care what the genre is, right? It's just, this sounds good. I was talking to a friend the other day who wants me to finally get back into the studio. And, you know, I've been kind of anti, since my EP, I've been anti-recording. I just didn't feel like it. Like, I just thought it was too much work, too much industry stuff. You got paid too many people. And to the first time now, I really feel like I owe it to the Keith Jarretts. I mean, when I first time I heard Nude Ants and the Colon concert, like, I owe it to these people. That's where my, you know, genesis was. So now it's like, for me not to record feels like a disservice.
Coming directly from the horseshoe crowd capital of the world, get a leg up and get ready for the hydrant. And now, the man currently trapped under the ice floor at Madison Square Garden, your host, Jim Cooper.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Hydrant. My guest this week is Alan Paul. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate you coming on.
Jim, it's an absolute pleasure and honor to be on the show. Looking forward to this.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Alan is a pianist, musician, composer, arranger, host, educator. Just the names go on and on and on and on. He studied classical music at one time, then moved into jazz, and now has built a reputation as a top-notch gospel musician. He's been side musician with so many names that are familiar to folk. Betty Wright, Raheem Devon, Slide Hampton, Jaguar Wright. He's had his own band called Unclassified, which is a great name, released an EP of original music, and they performed at the Port-au-Prince International Jazz Festival in Port-au-Prince, Haiti in 2015. He was featured as a performer at the Miami Jazz Cooperative's Piano Summit in 2020. He has just written a book and has a podcast, both going under the same name, God and Gigs, Succeed as a Musician Without Sacrificing Your Faith. So we've got a lot of areas to cover here. The book is kind of a guide for Christian musicians working in mainstream music industry. So having said all that, that's all the time we get. No, I'm kidding. Talk about the book first a little bit. What prompted you to write this in the first place?
Well, thanks so much for number one, even opening with, I mean, I get tired sometimes when I hear all those things, and it's like, well, this is the life I chose. And it's, it's like, I can't blame anybody for it. But yeah, I always tell people.
It's like, did I do that?
Yeah, did I do that? Oh my gosh, yeah. It's very, very smart decisions there, right, to do all the things. But I always remind people before I talk about the music and all the other things that I do, I always remind people that I'm a husband, I'm a father first, and then I'm a creative, and last of all, I'm forgiven. So I always like to keep those things in line. But the book comes from really those three things lined together. So obviously being a husband and a father, I'm married and I'm blessed to have a family, and I want to keep that family. I wanted to keep that as a priority throughout my life. But as a musician and a creative, went through being a teacher out of college, and then also becoming a full-time minister of music. So the book comes from this part. After being a full-time minister of music in a church, you kind of get very laser focused on just one thing. You just do that one thing. And I was busy doing that. And at one point, Jim, I found out I wasn't supposed to do that. I started to realize I was supposed to move into this other area. Here's a problem. I've forgotten or didn't really learn how to make a living as a musician. So
is not an easy thing to do to start with. And when you've got a family on top of that, that's not an easy road to take.
100%. So here I am after, eventually just saying, hey, it's time for me to make this change, moving away from that full-time, position in a church, and then moving back into gigging. I'm playing, for $50 as a fish dip at a blues club and wondering, okay, this probably wasn't another great career decision. What did I do here? So I started talking to other people. I started talking to other musicians and creatives in my field who had also been involved in, religious and church music, but who also were playing with Backstreet Boys and Julio Iglesias and performing with all these people. And they were doing the same thing I used to do. And so I asked them, how do you do it? And so I had one great backstage interview. I'll never forget this. One of my friends who was in the vocal a cappella group Take Six, incredible, iconic group, invited me backstage and gave me 2 hours of his time just to say, here's how I do it. Wow. Here's how I got into this professional atmosphere where I'm traveling all over the world, but I'm still keeping my life together. So the book is basically me telling my story and these other people's stories. How do you succeed as a musician? How do you continue to have a family, stay connected to your family, establish your priorities, be a professional musician that people actually like? And then also, in terms of the faith part, still go by what you believe in some very compromising places. As we all know, the music industry is not the most, I love Jim Morrison's, Van Morrison. Thank you. I couldn't get it right. But his quote was, music is spiritual. The music business is not. So knowing that, how do you keep yourself together and avoid all the pitfalls of entertainment and music? So yeah, the book came from that. Been blessed to have it now since, for all these years, it's become a core of like what I do and what I share. Because again, going back to that first piece, I'm a musician, but I'm also a husband and a father. And I'm a person that wants to actually have integrity. So the book helps people do that.
And it's interesting, you talk about all this and a couple things popped into my head. One, I have a very good friend that I used to work with who was also, he was an IT guy like I was full time, but he was very deeply into his faith and he was very deeply into his music. And he actually wrote an entire album based on the Pilgrim's Progress and performed it all over the place, like on weekends and that kind of thing. And not that he's making money at it, but it was such a deep faith for him. And on top of which, the songs he wrote were dynamite. And they were really good songs. So, he's still working full-time in IT because he's got the same thing, the wife and the kids. And, I understand that completely because it's very tough to do on a full-time basis. You've got to be, A, really good, which most people get as far as you have are really good. And the other side is you got to be really lucky. And it's, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. When you decided to say, okay, I need to do this balancing thing. I've got a wife, I've got kids, I've got music. What are the biggest pitfalls that you've stumbled on in trying to maintain that balance of family, Christian life, music, et cetera?
Such a great question. I think one of the first pitfalls I fell into, I can definitely point to myself, right? One of the first pitfalls I fell into was feeling like I had to measure up to some kind of artificial standard of what success looked like as a musician. As I just mentioned, several of my friends playing in huge tours, going all over the place and having albums. And I've always really told people that my view of myself, not in terms of like lowering myself, but I see myself as a local musician. I see my sweet spot in this local scene at Miami, Florida, South Florida, playing the jazz clubs, playing lobby music, like I call easy cheesy stuff. But here's a key one, collaborating with musicians and people that I love and care about and want to make music with. That's for me. Now, the second chapter of my book talks about establishing your priorities. And my priority, I tell this story a lot, based on what my family and my life looked like was, yes, I could perform all over the place. I want to be that level. But if I keep comparing myself to people who are going to Carnegie Hall and I try to be them, I've just shot myself in the foot. And now I'm not only spiritually kind of, angry and frustrated, but now my music is also frustrated because I'm not really doing what I'm good at. I'm trying to be something else. And so my music suffers and my character suffers and everything suffers. So that's been a huge one for me to kind of get comfortable, not with setting back and, lower my expectations, but being very, very comfortable with this is what success looks like for me. This is what music looks like for me.
That is just so critical. And I fight the same battles in the voiceover industry, which is the industry that I'm in primarily, is that it's so easy to start comparing yourself to others. And, and especially with the advent of social media, it looks like everybody else is being successful except me. So it's like, it's very easy to go down that rabbit hole. And when you said that you decided that your sweet spot is being a local musician, that's just so on the money. I mean, I can just see that. I mean, there's a couple places around here that have local musicians and they bring people in from like Maryland and that kind of thing. And there was one jazz band we saw that was just outstanding. And it doesn't mean that it's not a statement about your musical ability. It's a statement about your own inner self and the ability of where you belong and where you're comfortable being. And if that comfort is being a local musician, you know, that's, and you're good at it, that is, you know, success is not measured in dollars. It's measured in self-worth and that kind of thing. What was the line where, based on the title of your book, you know, succeeding as a musician without sacrificing your faith? Talk about that a little bit. What were some of the barriers that you came up against from the music side that you felt like, okay, this is sacrificing my faith a little bit. I have to pull back and realign here. Was there one or two things that fell into that category?
Oh, this is good. I'm glad you brought me here because first of all, let me put what this is not to. And I put this really literally in the prelude. This is not to the people who think, is not addressed to the people who think that any Christian musician that plays a song that doesn't have Jesus in it must be going to hell in a handbasket. Like, this is the first thing. This is not to the religiosity fundamentalist. Like, that's the first thing. If anyone, you know, I doubt if anybody is listening, things like that. But anyone that already thinks that Christian musicians of some sort, of any sort, have to like divorce themselves and be in some kind of bubble, this is not for you. I'm not for you. I made from the get-go, I'm not trying to convince anyone of anything in terms of what's morally right for them. Does that make sense? Help make it clear?
That's absolutely
my first thing. Like, I am not telling people what you should or shouldn't do.
You're not selling anything to anyone.
No, this is about personal conviction. So I think I probably should just stay there, and it's safe to stay there. I think personal conviction is where I had to say, okay, am I compromising what I believe and think to the point that in this particular performance, gig, whatever, that I'm not being true to myself? Now, that rarely happens. You know why? Because 9 times out of 10, the people I'm performing for, whether it's a bar or, you know, a bunch of a wedding or whatever, my job is to entertain. That's right. How I serve. So if at that point, this is a very famous thing, I'm going to go very deep for a second, but it's some type of phrase where I think one of the a Christian theologian talks about, should a cab driver take a man to a brothel? And the question is, did the taxi driver break God's law by driving the man to this? And the answer is no. The man in the so I'm not responsible, and I don't hold this weird, like, you know, judgment hammer over anyone's head on what they perform. I just say that in terms of my personal conviction, if there's a point where I realize, and I'll give you a perfect example, it wasn't the content of a band that I was working with. It was the time that the band was taking away from my family.
Right.
And so that was a personal conviction. Like, this is compromising my faith. I said I was going to be a good dad. I said I'd be home by a certain time. And I'm out here 3:00 a.m, 4:00 a.m, coming home dead tired. And the money's not worth it. It's compromising who I am and my faith, which says I'm supposed to be a good dad and a husband first. So it doesn't always have to be content that compromises, right? It could be anything in your personal conviction that says, hey, this is not for me. This doesn't fit who I am. And still be professional, by the way. Not, you know, I hate people who hold the Bible thing and say, oh, well, this is the reason I can't do this. Like, no. You decided not to do this. Don't put all of us under the bus and say, oh, the reason why you can't play this gig or whatever is because God said I can't play this music. Like, no.
Right.
So, it's very, thank you for going there because it's a very tricky one, especially obviously in religious circles. But I think it comes down to, again, what works best for you, and are you comfortable knowing that, you know, in that area, once you're clear with that, I don't have any X to grind with anyone.
It's an extension of personal responsibility in my mind. I mean, if that's what is important to you, and I, you know, you see all these artists that get so lost along the way because all they're focused on is the fame and the money. And I see all these kids that, you know, come up through like the America's Got Talent ranks or, you know, some of those shows. And they have the talent, but they just crash and burn because there's just like so much pressure put on them by the music industry right up front. And all they see are the dollar signs and fame and fortune. And it's just like, you know, slow down, take your time.
Yeah.
You know, don't forget who you are. And, you know, which is very easy to do. I'm not criticizing them for that, because it is very easy to do when the bright lights get in your face that it's like, this is what I'm all about. And it's not. So the fact that you were talking about your family was your first priority and everything else came second, that's just spot on. I love that. Let's talk a little bit about your background. From you went started in training in classical and then went to jazz. What was it that made you switch?
This is where I love going back to like the memories of, oh my gosh, how many student ensemble, whatever performances, like recital after recital. I was like, thank God for my mother who put up with all of that. And I didn't want to practice, by the way. So I was one of those. I was like,
oh, that'll help.
That'll help. Yeah. I was like,
having taken piano for 5 years and fought practicing the entire way, I get it.
Yes. And as a teacher, I got, you know, it was karma, right? It came back on me where all my students were exact same as me, but they were immensely talented. So I'll tell you the line that actually drew it was being up at actually Northern. You know, I know you're up north. This is north and west. Right. This is over in Michigan. There's a camp called Interlochen. I don't know if you're familiar with Interlochen.
Sure. Arts Academy. Yes.
So I got a chance to go to Interlochen as a teen, middle school. I can't remember what it was, like sophomore, whatever, junior in high school. But at that point, I was still doing classical. And to your point about the practicing and the, you know, where the rubber meets the road, like, do you really want to do this? I had this Russian teacher. Who was, yeah, you already knew I was going there, but she was Russian and she was just adamant on nailing everything. And I was doing this Beethoven sonata. On the mean side, the classical students are on one side. It's like this kind of border wall thing. The classical right. students are on one side, the jazz students are on the side. I keep sneaking across the border to go to the jazz side of Interlochen. And the guys are all cool. They're like, their shirts are out. You know what I mean? They're like, they're dressing, you know, the uniform means nothing to them. And they're just in the sheds, just working all night long or whatever. And I was like, at that point, I was like, yeah, I'm on the wrong side of this equation. I need to be on the jazz side. And I had already been learning. Listening to Kind of Blue, Miles Davis, that had caught my ear. I was already learning by ear.
Best albums ever made.
100% literally is, yes, yes, yes. There is no music without Kind of Blue, like in terms of like the, you know, last right. 60, 70 years. And then finally, I guess the last thing, little story I'll tell is the Gershwin Concerto was my path through classical into jazz, because I got to play that with an orchestra at 18. And it was like, wow, this is the pinnacle of classical, right? Being able to play with an orchestra. But at the same time, what really brought me into wanting to practice was the Gershwin chords, was the amazing, like, improvisatory nature of this. So I could find myself kind of like, it was like a graduation. It's like, okay, this is, I'm not going to be playing this classical stuff much longer. I can't give it the credit. I love all of my Rachmaninoff and all this. I love it. I just can't give it the time I want to give it.
Well, and no one bridged classical and jazz like Gershwin. I mean, just, you know, you listen to, whether it's Rhapsody in Blue or whatever it happens to be, you know, he nailed it as far as building that bridge between the two. So to me, that's just a natural, you know, you found the natural path of bridging one to the other. That's outstanding. When you talk about switching to jazz piano, was it that type of jazz? Was it more of the Birth of the Cool kind of jazz, or was it more of the swing or the bop, or what did you find yourself doing?
I was honestly, Jim, I can't even say. It was absolutely first Miles and Kind of Blue and wanting to sound like Whitney Kelly, wanting to sound like Bill Evans. So I really can't say it was a specific. Herbie Hancock was a huge influence. So you got this funk, incredible, like, So I can't even say there was a specific genre that drew me. It was like the floodgates were open, right? It was like now all the music I've been hearing, and by the way, all the influences that, of course, you know, you can talk about the R&B and all this other pop stuff, that you start to go back. I'll give you another artist that I did not realize was so influenced by jazz, but I was heavy into Sting at the time. And Sting was, I didn't know this, I didn't realize it so late, but Sting was literally hiring all these jazz cats, the Kenny Kirklands, and he was just, and so I'm like, I love this stuff, but why did I love it? I loved it because he was bringing in these influences from jazz and then melding them. So if there was a specific genre, I would say it was probably anything involving the fusion, right? Anything involving, not necessarily fusion as in like the street fusion, but anything where like bridges were like being made between the bop and the cool and all this other thing. And people who were like kind of like in the, like undefinable people, you know what I mean? The ones that were like you said, like a Herbie and a Miles and a Chick Corea, who one album would be this and the next album would be that. Yep. I love those people because that was me. Like I couldn't pick one. I couldn't pick a genre. So all of my heroes are the people that couldn't pick genres.
And Chick Corea is another one, you know, from you know, absolutely acoustic piano into fusion, into playing with Miles, into having Return to Forever. You know, he was just across the board. There was a movie in the late 80s. I think it was called Stormy Monday. And Sting was in it. And he plays a jazz bass player. And there's a section in the movie where it's just him playing an upright bass solo. And it's like, I think that was the first time I realized that he had such deep jazz roots, because it was right there in the movie. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. So I get that, you know, that whole period. And we could probably talk about this and make everyone nauseous for hours and hours and hours. It's such a rich field. And you know, people like Keith Jarrett.
Oh,
and,
see, you know, this is your fault. If you're going to name Keith Jarrett, you've now... yeah, it's your fault. And I'll take a moment right there, because this is where I'm at right now as a performer. I think this does relate, because 20 years later, after that period, right, after growing into jazz or whatever, and as I just mentioned, all of my winding twists and turns through, you know, everything, right? Have keyboard will travel. It's really, you know, every genre becomes like open to you. Like everything, once it sounds good, you don't care what the genre is, right? It's just, this sounds good. And so one of the things I'm realizing now is, I was talking to a friend the other day who wants me to finally get back into the studio. And, you know, I've been kind of anti, since my EP, I've been anti-recording. I just didn't feel like it. Like, I just thought it was too much work, too much industry stuff. You got to pay too many people.
Work.
And to the first time now, I really feel like I owe it to the Keith Jarretts. I mean, when I heard Nude Ants and the Colin concert, like, I owe it to these people.
The Colin concert. No,
they put, yes. So, but that's where my, you know, genesis was. So now it's like, for me not to record feels like a disservice. For me not to say, yeah, I'm going to put myself out there and sit down in a studio and sit down behind a piano and record this, because they did, right? I'm not a musician. If they don't sit down, I couldn't go visit those guys live or see them live. So if they don't sit down in a studio and make this stuff happen, then I'm not where I'm at now. So it's like, okay, Alan, well, you got to sit down and, like, you know, do give them honor by putting yourself through the same stuff.
And maybe it's a deal like with the Colin concert. Go out and play a gig and record it. You know, that way you can still do the studio thing without actually going in the studio.
Yeah,
and
having
played with bands and recorded a couple CDs, it's a very work intensive and money intensive process. There's just no question about it. But, you know, maybe that's a different way of doing things. Well, we could talk about this for hours, but it's just like, maybe we will later. But I want to get on to some of the more bizarre questions.
Oh boy!
Before we do that, though, I want to mention it once again: your book, God and Gigs: Succeed as a Musician Without Sacrificing Your Faith. It's also the name of his podcast, God and Gigs, which is out there. I assume it's available on like Apple Podcasts and all the other podcasts. Yeah, okay, we're all in the same boat. Okay, cool. All right, let me ask you some of these, and we'll see where this takes us, because I never know. What song should play every time you walk into a room?
What song should play, as in like out, like in my head, or like is like a theme song?
Out. Theme song.
Oh, gosh. I'm hearing what my wife thinks right now. Like, she's some type of clown music. Oh my gosh. I can't pick one. Like, I don't know. It depends on the room, right? It depends if I want to walk in as like James Bond, or if I want to walk in as like, you know, the Cosby Show with like the theme song where I'm the cool dad coming home. I would pick, you know what? I'll go with that. If I could walk in with the Cosby Show theme song, because, you know, whatever happened in the past, let's go past that, right? The actual the actual time that he was, you know, doing that, that song was the coolest thing. So, and the jazz, right? And he kept doing new versions of it. So I'm going to pick that one.
You know, it's something I struggle with all the time because I grew up listening to Bill Cosby albums.
Mm-hmm.
And actually went to see him. So went to see him in concert when I lived in Houston. And this is at a time when his career was just at the bottom. You could get tickets for $10. And, you know, we went to see him and just, you know, laughed our heads off. And it was just like, but I look at the albums now and there's this sense of guilt of even just listening to the albums. And I've got to work on getting past that because whatever happened over here is one thing. And what happened over here is another thing. And it's something I still struggle with and work on all the time.
I'm saying, like, I know we can't go there because you have another question, but quickly, that's kind of where the book, again, kind of comes down to. It's like, hey, your art is one thing, your character is another. Yeah, you know, you don't want to make people choose, right? So, like, you know, so I've definitely struggled with the same thing. Even as I answered the question, it was like, but it's true. Like, the music stands for itself. The music stands for itself.
Right.
And again, you know, he's got to deal with whatever. But and same with a million other great artists that we know that we would not copy their lifestyles, right? Like, we would not want to be, you know, doing the things that they did, but we love what they created.
Certainly don't condone this part of your life,
exactly.
You know, because that's your life. But your artwork over here is still standing on its own. So I'm glad you said that, because it's like I still need to work on that because I love listening to the older albums. Okay, what breed of dog would you be?
Would I be? Okay, I'm going to go with the same one that I love to death, which is a golden retriever. Man, golden retrievers are like, those are like the dog. And my wife won't let me have one. Like, she's not a big dog person. So here I am, like, with two cats in the house. I'm like, what happened? What happened to my life, Lord? Like, you know, I'm a golden person.
I might have to have both of you together on a podcast. That would be interesting.
It would be interesting to get her to even, like, I've done over 6 years of episodes. She's been on two of my shows.
Right.
And that's always bribery in terms of that.
Okay. What movie makes you laugh no matter how many times you've seen it?
Again, as soon as you said it, like, she's cringing somewhere. There are two that are so dumb, and it doesn't matter how many times I watch it, it's still Steve Martin, The Jerk, his first movie.
Great movie.
It's so dumb. It's so perfect. And it doesn't matter which scene I watch, I'm going to laugh like it's the first time I ever saw it. And another one that is similar to that, oh gosh, they're all the spoof, right? The airplanes, right? The Mel Brooks, like anything
God, yeah.
All of those. Just put them all in one big category. That is my silly, ridiculous sense of humor. I'm not a big movie person, but if I'm going to go watch a movie, you need to be as ridiculous as possible. Right. And so
those are.
Yes, exactly.
That's great. If you were an ice cream flavor, what would you be?
These are such.
I told you these are bizarre.
Oh gosh. Ice cream flavor?
Right.
I have no idea like where I would go. I'm just thinking like, again, my big ice cream guy. I don't know. Maybe the mint chocolate chip sounds good to me. Sounds good. Like right now, like I could go for a mint chocolate chip right now. So I would like to be as refreshing and tasty as that. I don't know if that's what we're going for.
I've been doing this podcast for almost 3 years and the majority of the answers to that question have been mint chocolate chip.
Are you serious?
Yes, absolutely.
That is insane. That's like, there's got to be a study on that or something. Because I know the kind of people you interview, you know, and I've listened to your show a few times. So it was like, okay, what do we all have in common that we...
Yeah, and I tried to do that after the first year. I went back and I, you know, totaled up all the answers and tried to do some statistics on it and tried to make something out of it. I was like, wow, I'm never doing that again. That just took way too much time.
No, you need to get that to some egg-headed, yes, get some scientists, and they will get like millions of dollars to do a study on why creators and entrepreneurs prefer mint chocolate chip
ice cream. It's a whole study. Who would play you in a movie about your life?
Oh, gosh. And here's where I'm stuck, too, because I'm not that... My wife, I know all the actors. I'm not good at actors. Because I'll just go Denzel, just because I know that.
That works. That works.
I mean, why not?
You couldn't pick a better actor.
Exactly. Why not? Why not go for the best? Yeah, I'll stick with that. And I'll say, secondly, that there's so much in my life that I don't tell people that I'd be very, very nervous about that screenplay. I'd be very,
well,
very
that's going to play into a question we've got coming up.
Okay, cool.
Later,
all right, good.
All right, let's do some either or things. I'll just give you two things and you tell me what your preference is. Passenger or driver?
Driver.
Summer or winter?
Wow, I'm in South Florida, so winter.
I guess it's an unfair question. Bananas or watermelon?
I'm more bananas than watermelon. It's watermelons like every once in a while.
Okay. Toilet paper, over or under?
Oh, it's over. It's over. I don't know why this is still a discussion. It's.
Everybody, regardless of which side you fall on, is so militant about the position that it's just unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable.
Like, hey, I talk about not compromising. We don't compromise on that. Like,
there are people that said, if I come to your house and it's under, I'm switching it. I'm turning it over.
Yes, so I'm one of those people. I'm sorry. I'm trying to help you out here.
God. Eggs, omelet, or scrambled?
Oh, I'm going scrambled, especially if I'm making them. I'm so bad at omelets.
Yeah, my wife and I fight over the stove all the time, so I get it. Library or museum?
You know, wow, this is a good one. I'm not sure. I'll say museum only because I haven't been to a library in so long, but I used to love going to the library. Like, that was like, you know, you just get lost and just go Miranda around or whatever. So, yeah, right. I'll say museum just because that's most recent.
Okay. Now we'll get into the would you rather questions. And here's where it's going to get really interesting.
Now it's going to get okay.
It's been fun, but now it's going to get interesting. Which superpower would you rather have? Invisibility or pamnesia, which is the power to remember and recall everything you've ever thought, felt, encountered, or experienced.
Okay, what was the first one?
Invisibility.
Invisibility.
Or the pamnesia, ability to remember absolutely everything about your life.
Man, as soon as you said it, it was like, there are a lot of things I'm glad I can't remember.
Right.
I don't want to remember. If I got to pick a superpower, I'm definitely going invisible, especially after a gig. Like, I'm, yeah, like,
why? I get that. I understand that.
Yeah, I'm like, that. Where's Alan? Like,
I understand that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, let someone else break all the equipment down.
Exactly.
got it. As a drummer, I understand that. So, would you rather go skydiving in a rainstorm or climb the antenna at the top of the Empire State Building on a windy day?
Skydiving in a rainstorm or climb
antenna at the top of the Empire State Building on a windy day.
I am not about either one is heights, right? So, I'm definitely not.
Both
I'm
would kill me.
Not so. A fan of heights, but I'm definitely going with the skydiving. I mean, rain is like okay, and I'm with somebody. Not those antennas, man. I look at those things, those people take their lives in their hands. God bless them, but no.
The genesis of that question is that I found a picture on the internet that was taken of two guys on top at the antenna on top of the Empire State Building. They were doing some repair work, and the picture was taken from the top down. So you could see the top of their heads, but you could also see all the way down. And yeah, I get let googly just looking at the picture. It's just like, it creeps me out.
I got to tell you, there's a condition. It's not fear of heights. And I'm telling on myself here. You've encouraged me to be transparent. There's a condition. I can't think of the whole name, but it's called, but it's basically the fear of bridges. I had a nightmare back when I was a kid of a bridge that was unfinished and me falling off. That still struggle. I still struggle with that, man. I still struggle every time. It's like, this thing's gonna hold up, right? Like 7 zillion cars.
I know a couple people that have that.
Debilitating. Not a fan. Not a fan.
Yeah. Would you rather give up your cell phone for a month or bathing for a month?
Oh, cell phone. Oh, please. Please take it. Can you take it? I'll give it away. I'll pay somebody to take it from me, please.
I would too. Would you rather have to eat only liver for the rest of your life or be forced to watch an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians every day?
Oh, gosh. These are horrible.
It's a horrible question. It's a horrible question.
Oh, gosh. How many episodes do I have to watch? One?
One every day.
I mean, liver is not horrible, but I can't see myself eating liver like every day. I think I'll go to sleep during the episode. Like, my wife cooks really well. I'm gonna keep my food options open and watch some foolishness.
Right,
I'll survive.
Right, until a lot of people go that route. If you could add anyone to Mount Rushmore, who would it be?
Anyone. Not just a president.
Not just a president. Anyone.
Oh, gosh. This is good. Add anyone to Mount Rushmore. I'm a history nerd because I'm a huge Abraham Lincoln person, and he's already there. So who would I add? You know what? I'm going to say the first one that popped into my head, which is such a strange thing. I don't know why I thought of this. I put Moses. It's weird.
That's an interesting pick.
It's weird. Maybe because I just read it recently. I don't even know why it's in my head. But I guess he is in the Capitol, right? Like the whole, you know, thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think he is in the Capitol.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't even know why I came up with that. You bring us weird stuff in here, man. I didn't know that was coming out.
You said you're a history buff. Are you an ancestry buff?
To a point. No, I can't say I follow through with it. My mother's side is very well researched, thank God. So I do have all the way down to 1860s. My great, 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 great grandmother and grandfather, Isaac and Georgianne Williams. So we have traced my mother's side, and it's a beautiful thing to have. I have Tuskegee Airmen in my family. That's really awesome. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm an ancestry freak. I've done our whole family, and I never miss, you know, Dr. Gates's show on finding your roots. And
I've been hearing more and more about it. And he also did a thing on music on gospel recently that I need to watch.
I was told it's a great show. You need to watch it. It is an absolutely great show. The gospel thing that he did, it's just wonderful.
Very cool.
Let's see. Would you rather be able to remain immortal or fly?
Have the ability to fly. Okay. Right. So I'm going to stay in the make believe realm, because obviously I do have some feelings about immortality, but that's not what we're talking about here. Right. So
I hadn't thought of that, but you're right.
Exactly. I was like, let's not go there. Too serious. And honestly, it goes back to the whole thing. Like, I mean, flying to me is not like something else. You know, I'm already trying to stay on the ground, man. Like, unless I get there faster. You see, I'm thinking all this stuff too. I can't just make a decision.
You're thinking way too hard. I am.
This is what my wife doesn't like. Like, Alan, choose one: bacon or egg. Like, just
right.
Guys, so I'll go with the flying. I'll go with the flying.
Okay. Good. Oh, you're gonna love this one.
Oh, great! I'm just trying to get out of this.
Would you rather have whatever you are thinking appear in a bubble above your head for everyone to read, or have absolutely everything you do be live streamed for everyone to watch?
All right. Y'all don't want to look. Y'all just going to have to see everything, because you know what's out here is not what's as bad as what's in here. So yes, we're broadcasting it all, whatever, because at least I can control that. I don't control what comes in here.
I get it.
I'm really nervous. I want to listen to this in front of somebody and watch somebody some of my reactions, because I'm like, I'm scared of myself with these, some of these answers.
This has been an absolute delight. You know, it's, I'm so glad we connected. And this is just wonderful. And I hope we can keep that connection going.
For sure.
For all of you, you listening, Alan Paul's book, God and Gigs, Succeed as a Musician Without Sacrificing Your Faith. It's also the name of his podcast, God and Gigs, which you can find on podcast platforms all over the place. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Absolutely a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next time on The Hydrant. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us on The Hydrant. The Hydrant announcer is Allison Steele. For outstanding VO coaching and voice acting services, visit Allison at allisonsteele.com. That's Allison with a Y and Steele with no E at the end. Shoot me an email with any comments, questions, worthwhile recipes at bigdog@jimcoopervo.com. This episode, copyright 2024, by Jim Cooper VO and Nat Landcore Audio, which is solely responsible for its content. No reproduction by writing, recording, reposting, smoke signals, AI voice loading, Morse code, or any other electronic or manual recording method known to man is allowed without prior written consent. Come back and play with us next week as the steady stream of outstanding guests continue at The Hydrant.